Welcome. Would you please rise and join me in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now I'd ask that we observe a brief moment of silence for those we've recently lost in the community. You may name them out loud or keep it to yourself. I'd like to remember Marty Meltz, who died this past month, who was a great volunteer throughout the county. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Here.
Director Ojolsen. Director Tronofsky.
Here.
Vice President Millage.
Here.
President Storm.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, can we have the report out of closed session, please?
There was no reportable action.
Thank you. Okay, so moving on, I just want to note that I'm going to move General Action 12C and make that 7C so that we can get Mr. Miller home sooner rather than later. So 12C will be 7C. Okay, with that, we'll move on to 7A, and we'll ask Mr. Geis to present our draft audit.
Dressed in black, I don't know.
Hi, my name is Adam Geis, and I'm the auditor in charge of the audit for Los Osos CSD. I'd like to say that it's nice to be out here a little bit earlier than we have in the last couple of years, which is a good thing. So what you have in front of you is the draft of the audit. There were still a few items that we were waiting on from the district accountant that we did get, and those are included in the final report. The items that we were still waiting on was the management discussion and analysis letter, which goes in the front and summarizes the financial statements. And then the RSI required supplementary information at the end of the report on pages 48 and 49, which is the disclosures on the various. Okay. And we do have the updated copies in the back for the public. The required supplementary information that was updated is disclosures for the net pension liability and contributions. I would like to point out that this is a clean audit opinion this year. There are a few findings, but there was nothing that got in the way of any kind of opinion other than a clean audit. So that's a good thing for the district. Staff was helpful. I know we came in to do some of our year-end work right at the very start of when Renee was coming in. So I think, was that maybe the first or second week that she was here? And she was helpful in helping us get the information that we needed, and as well as always very helpful and responsive to us. So walking through, I guess I'll start with the financial statements themselves. If you go to page 12 and 13, this is kind of a breakout of all of the district expenditures and revenues, everything that occurred in the district throughout the year. You can see that there was a little bit of a negative change in net position in the business type activities. And then there was a prior period adjustment, positive prior period adjustments. The net assets in the end were a little bit up from what they were, or net position in the end was a little bit up from what it was the prior year. Those prior period adjustments, the main adjustment there was the district. Margaret, in particular, led a project to go through all of their capital assets and do an inventory of exactly what the district had on hand and how much those items had originally costed. Over the last few years, the district's capital assets schedule had kind of gotten a little bit out of date and wasn't being updated on a regular basis, which is also one of our findings. So Margaret had gone through and done a good job of getting all the information, so we were able to get an accurate list of what the the district has. Another item that I wanted to point out is over on page 39, and this is dealing with the district's CalPERS pension plans. Now, the CalPERS plans isn't something that the district really has a whole lot of control over. The ups and downs in the pension liability has to do with how CalPERS investments do, what their projections look like, how much the CalPERS is asking the district to pay into it. But there is kind of a sensitivity on the top of page 39 that shows what happens if CalPERS adjusts their discount rate, which is kind of their expected rate of return on their investments. They adjusted their discount rate up from 7.5 to 7.65% for the year that we're looking at. But I did notice that in December of this year, they passed a plan over the next three years, starting with next year. They're going to lower that discount rate all the way down to 6%. So as you can see, that'll lead to an increase in what's reported on the pension liability. So just something to be aware of for the future. The letter that I have that discusses the internal controls of the district, we had three findings that we listed in there this year. The first one was what I already hit on with the capital assets and basically that the district should be doing a regular reconciliation of what they have and keeping that list up to date. Not only is it good to know what the district has in case things need to be replaced, but it's good accounting practice to make sure that depreciation is being recorded regularly, that all the additions are recorded properly so the district has a good idea of what they have on hand. The accounting for the fiduciary fund. This is the fund for the old bond issue that's mostly run by the county, and the assessments are collected and go into the county to pay. There was some other expenses that were getting mixed in with that fund between what the district should be handling and what those assessments are directly paying for. And that was kind of an educational matter. Just the accountant wasn't aware of exactly what the purpose of that fund is. And then also that the bankruptcy agreement required that $25,000 be put into that reserve fund every year. The $25,000 was collected. I wanted to clarify that. It was collected and it was put in the redemption account with the bank, but the transfer to initiate that transfer from the redemption to the reserve account was not done during the course of the year. And as you can see, the district's corrective action that staff has directed that transfer be made. The final one was dealing with the accrued vacation time of the district. And basically, an employee that we tested wasn't getting their vacation accrued at the correct rate. And again, that has to do with the payroll system that was being used and its deficiencies in keeping track of that item and making sure that was being tracked and reconciled on a regular basis. The other items that you see in this letter, findings 2015-1-5, I wanted to note those were findings from last year, and as you can see, most of those were implemented in the current year and were no longer on the list of findings. Do you guys have any questions or
any questions from the board? Okay. So at this time, I'll have public comment on the draft audit.
Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and I had hoped that we would kind of get back into a order of having your committee look at this first and help with the response to the draft audit each year. We used to do that. The missed movement of the money to the bond reserve surprised me. Your board went through some real gyrations in order to raise the assessment and see that that was always going to be funded, and then to have a glitch that didn't get the funding done surprised me. But as I recall, you got warning letters from the bank and still no one acted on them, and that has led to the bond rate suspension by Standard & Poor's, which is a huge problem still today. The older findings, the overpayments to employees, I'm remembering the letter from Jim Erb to the board some years ago now, a year and a half about, asking that those funds get recovered. And if they're not recovered, that's a gift of public funds. So I'd like to see that rectified and remedied more than just what's been put into place by, you know, the recommendations from the auditor of how not to do that again. You have to get that money back. And if you're not going to, then maybe say so. Make some sort of statement. So, again, I think your committee, with some time on this, they probably would have some more questions. But, again, we seem to have slipped into a period of time without committees. And I had understood from the statements of these board members that the committees were valuable to you. I really thought that they were, but yet they haven't been meeting. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else on the draft audit? Okay, closing public comment. Is there any action we need to take at this time?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Geis. And now we're going to move on to a presentation about local government fundamentals. District Council Hanley, take it away.
Hey, bear with me while I actually spent time working on your district business this afternoon instead of testing the, thank you. So I'll just tell you right away, I don't consider this to be training. This is really just review. It's good for us all to think about the things constantly, but it's also good, let's say on a yearly basis, to at least have some review and discussion of them if necessary. These things always go better if someone asks a question from the board as opposed to me droning, but I'm perfectly capable of droning for a while if that's how it's going to be. The whole presentation covers openness and transparency. That's basically the open meeting laws. I also have some slides, basically the last third or more, that cover other issues. If it's the board desire, after I finish the Brown Act portion, we might just stop there. Depends on how bored you've got with my voice. Why do we do this? Really, it's because as a public official, you're stuck with being governed by a very complicated set of laws and rules that is way different than anything you do in your real life. And it boils down to, actually, quite often you can't use common sense in order to solve problems. My favorite pet peeve is when people want us to act more like a business because we're not allowed to. In a very real sense. And the classic example is if I represent a business client and a decision, it would be nice to have a decision made now. I can call my board members on the phone and get a consensus about what to do, and that's perfectly legal, fine, proper, and probably good practice. If I did that with this board, I'd risk putting us all in jail. So we don't do that, and it slows things up. But those are the duties we deal with. So what's at stake with this? Well, I mean, primarily, we want to have good government. Yeah, we want to follow the law. We don't want to go to jail. But, I mean, really, the whole goal of this whole thing is to have good government. We have to look at it that way. We want to use our following of the rules to enhance the ability of people to participate in governing themselves here. That's what we do as a local agency. We would like to promote confidence in our processes. And then lastly, we also do want to avoid criminal and civil penalties. And we also want to make sure that everything that you take action on, that action stands up and we don't have to revisit things. The four key concepts, well, the key concepts is for tonight's discussion will be serial meetings and closed sessions, Public Records Act, and conflict rules. We could get to tonight if you feel like, or we'll skip it to a later. So basically, the whole idea of the Brown Act is to guarantee the public's right to attend and govern their participation and how they participate in local meetings. It's not exactly a free speech forum. It's different. It's a business meeting of the board of directors, but the public has the right to attend, and the public has specified rights to participate in the meeting by virtue of their public comment and commenting on agenda items. Who is subject to the Brown Act? Obviously, the board of directors. The Brown Act says subsidiary bodies and their members are subject to the Brown Act. Here, that would be your standing committees. I don't know if you have any private corporations here that are publicly created. Some entities create visitors bureaus. Would be a more classic example around here. Places like Pismo Beach and Morro Bay are going to have visitors bureaus. And if the visitors bureau is created by action of the entity, even though they may set up a separate nonprofit, then that still would be a Brown Act body. If there are private corporations that are both funded by the district and board member participation in that private corporation is appointed by the board of directors, then that would be a Brown Act body. If a member of the board of directors just participates as a member of a board of directors of a private corporation but isn't appointed by this body, then that private corporation is just private and it's not subject to the Brown Act. Also, people who have been elected but not sworn into office yet, those people are subject to the Brown Act. The most important thing to remember about is what constitutes a meeting. If a meeting is going to take place, we have notice requirements, agenda requirements, the public participation, recording requirements, disclosure requirements, and we have permissible closed sessions. So what is a meeting? Anytime a majority of members of the board are present at the same time and place to hear, discuss, or deliberate items of discussion within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board, that's a meeting. It doesn't mean any time all five of you are present in the same room that it's a meeting. You could all five decide it would be fun to go out and lunch together. And you could go have lunch together, and as long as you did not discuss anything within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board, that would be legal. Now, we don't recommend that because it's very difficult to prove a negative, to prove that you didn't do something wrong, and you know there aren't witnesses, but that's legal. And some places, people do that all the time. They'll regularly go out either before or after meetings for just a social occasion, and it's legal. Not recommended, but it's legal. The serial meeting is the thing that gets most people in trouble that do get in trouble. That's the legal definition there. Basically, you just have to think about it in terms of accidental deliberation outside of a meeting by three or more of you. And if that happens, that's a serial meeting. Technically, any two of you can meet at any time to discuss district business. In fact, it would be legal for two of you, I'll pick on Board Member Ternatsky and Sasenia at this moment, it would be perfectly legal for those two board members to go to lunch tomorrow to discuss business items and just talk about them. And they could even share their opinions on how votes ought to go in the future. And let's say that the next day, Board Member Sasenia decided It would be really good to talk to Board Member Millage about this. That would be legal, too, as long as Board Member Sasania doesn't carry with him into that conversation anything that he got from Board Member Ternatsky. It's the accidental concurrence of three, even though they're not there at the same time, that creates the serial meeting. Now, again, we don't recommend that you do that very often, but it is perfectly legal. And I'm not, I may have an opinion on what's a good idea, but I'm not going to tell you it's illegal to do that unless I think it's illegal. And it's perfectly legal to have those types of just one-on-one meetings between you, as long as you don't carry messages back and forth. Basically, there's two types of serial meetings that accidentally occur. Hub and spoke, that's one person who is carrying the message to a quorum of the board. It wouldn't have to be a board member. It could be a staff member. It could be a member of the public, even if that person isn't a lobbyist in the law or in their own feeling. If a message is carried to three or more of you for the purpose of discussing and reaching a consensus, that's a violation of the Brown Act. I often recommend to members of bodies like this board of directors that if a constituent wants to talk to you about business items, you can't say no, because part of your job is being available to your constituents. You can ask them not to share with you what any other board member has said. Quite often, people in the public feel that it's perfectly okay. My God, I've talked to two of them. I think I've got two votes now. If I can just go convince the third one, and then they want to tell you, by God, I've talked to two members already, and this is what they think. If I just get you, we'll get it done. You've got to put the brakes on that, because that puts you in a position of violating the Brown Act, even though the first two board members didn't, and they had no part in conveying the thought process to you. People can get offended when you do that because they think you're violating their free speech rights, but I do advise reminding people that you are subject to some rules that don't apply to them. Obviously, individuals can contact you. Any member of the public can contact all five of you serially, and as long as they're not creating a serial meeting between you, that's perfectly okay. Staff briefings. It's perfectly legal for your general manager and your district legal counsel to talk to you, all five of you, serially between meetings. Likewise, as with members of the public, we can't be creating a concurrence between you, and so we don't tell you what the other members are thinking or saying, but we can convey all the same information to you. You can even have a conversation. You don't have to sit there like a stone just listening when they're speaking to a staff member or me. You can have a conversation, and you can ask questions, express thoughts, and as long as your staff doesn't create that serial meeting for you, that's perfectly legal. Same thing for constituents, lobbyists, or other intermediaries. The one thing we have to do is not do deal-making or shuttle diplomacy. An example of one-way communication is I will quite often, as a habit, send privileged communications to all five of you at the same time. Now, generally, it's blind copied. I blind copy because I don't want any of you to accidentally hit reply all, and then we have a serial meeting. This way you can reply safely, and it's that same type of conversation. Please.
You're not going to be able to hear me anyway, so excuse me. So I just want to clarify something for everybody's benefit here. So, like, for example, when staff or you or, you know, ask for feedback from a board member, like the five individual board members, like you said, and then we're not copying each other, and then the staff recommendation reflects what they've heard from those five separate board members, that's not deal-making. That's just getting input from the board members, correct?
Right. I would clarify it even further, though.
I just want to make sure everybody understood
as habit,
that, right?
the way we do that is we do learn things so that we know how to present things, but we don't figure out what our recommendation is going to be by contacting you all serially and then deciding, okay, I've talked to them, now I know what my recommendation is going to be. But we do, even though technically as long as we didn't create concurrence amongst you, we can do that. But happily, it's more refined than that. It's really just communication, so we make sure that in giving our recommendations, we can address everybody's concerns. Yeah. Because the last one there is, there's new there was an actual case about this, Wolf versus City of Fremont, and the courts ruled that the way the Brown Act used to be written, you could get really, really close to consensus in these discussions. And so the legislature passed the law that's represented in that last bullet point there, that we don't want to use these to reach a consensus, and we don't. I've really basically covered that one. So serial shuttle diplomacy that state legislature uses and Congress uses, we can't. So the state legislature isn't covered by the Brown Act, and they don't fall anything close to that. They build all their consensus behind closed doors without benefit of public scrutiny or conduct. Yes, they get to, exactly. If we constantly pay attention to it, it's pretty easy to avoid serial meeting rules, because anytime something comes up that's close, you can say, oops, wait a minute, let's just stop there. And we'll just have to wait and let's put it on the agenda and then talk about it then. So I always recommend that when you're discussing anything with anybody, whether it be me, a constituent, a lobbyist, someone from the Board of Supervisors or whatever, if you avoid either soliciting, communicating, or hearing the views of other board members, then you're going to avoid a serial meeting. Individual contacts are not subject to the Brown Act. You can attend conferences. Just the Brown Act is very specific about what conferences you can attend, and that's, even if all five of you go, that's perfectly legal. It doesn't provide you an opportunity to think, okay, now we're in Sacramento at a legislative day and we're all here, so why don't we just have a meeting to discuss district business? You can't do that, but you can all be up there attending the same briefings, and obviously those briefings are relevant to your service. So it's relevant to district business, but it's very specifically allowed by the way the Brown Act was drafted. You can attend another body of an agency. I recommend, for instance, technically, any of you can attend standing committee meetings, but you have to remember not to participate there so that we don't accidentally create a serial meeting. Back to social ceremonial events, you can always attend social ceremonial events. The golden shovel. Quite often you'll see every board member at the photo op for the golden shovel. Those don't have to be noticed as meetings, and you can all attend, and it's perfectly legal. Again, we don't use that concurrence to have a secret meeting, but you can all be there. This is something your staff really pays attention to for you, which is the notice requirements. 72 hours for regular meetings, 24 hours for special meetings. Emergency meetings is something very particular. It doesn't mean I really, really, really want to have a meeting now. And so I've been in this line of work for decades now, and I have once attended an emergency meeting that was actually an emergency meeting. You can do a special meeting on 24 hours notice. You don't have to have a reason for special meeting. There's no limitation on what you can discuss at a special meeting as long as you notice it properly as to what you're going to discuss. And so it's very easy to schedule special meetings on 24 hours notice. In fact, actually, It usually takes longer than that because we've got to match people's calendars. So it's very difficult to get a meeting scheduled within 24 hours of deciding that you want to have a special meeting. Oddly, the Brown Act allows you, even without using staff, you can discuss whether or not you want to call a special meeting. And you can discuss that amongst all five of you, because a quorum of you can decide to call a special meeting without your staff doing it. And so obviously you can discuss that issue amongst yourselves. You can discuss enough of the issue that you're concerned about, certainly to know whether or not you want to have a special meeting. I wouldn't recommend coming to a concurrence on what you're going to do at the special meeting, but you can't decide whether or not you want to have a special meeting unless you know what the topic's going to be and whether or not you think it's worth addressing now as opposed to waiting until later. And so you can have all those discussions, and that's perfectly legal. Your staff does this on the meeting agendas. That's not something that you're responsible for. Public participation, again, and I always emphasize, it's a business meeting of the board of directors. It's not a public forum. It's not a town hall meeting. But since it is a business meeting of the board of directors, the public has rights to participate. And your standard practice is in compliance with the Brown Act in those regards. Closed sessions, just like emergency meetings, can't have emergency meetings because you really, really want to. And you can't have closed session meetings because you'd really rather not talk about it in public. You have to have a specific closed session item that's allowable to be held in closed session, and then you can. Other than that, you can't, even if it's distasteful. Life's just rough sometimes. So the common grounds that we see are the real property negotiations. We had four of them on today. Litigation, performance evaluation and or discipline of public employees. Now, here, this board evaluates two of your employees. So the only ones you would ever expect to see on the agenda would be those two, either the general manager or the district counsel. The other employees report to your general manager. So those evaluations and or disciplines are not put on the agenda, and you don't participate in them. You can hear and go into closed session complaints and charges. That rarely happens. Again, decades, I've done that once. No, twice, I'm sorry. One pop baked in my brain. Labor negotiations, your instructions can be given to your staff in closed session. We're supposed to keep the discussion of closed session private. Now, that's just the discussion items. We do, if there's a reportable action, have to report out. If there's an actual vote, some actions take vote. The vote is made public, usually upon inquiry, but that's a public item. Just because we discussed something in closed session does not mean that every actual factual thing you heard in closed session is confidential. Because sometimes you're going to hear a lot of things that aren't confidential, but they're relevant to what you're discussing in closed session. So it becomes a little tricky sometimes because you're not supposed to run out and say, this is what so-and-so said, and I'm really mad because the other two didn't think this way and I wanted to do it that way. But certain facts that you, just because you happen to learn them in closed session, doesn't mean that they're confidential. You can discuss those facts. Same thing sometimes with confidential communications from your district counsel. The communication itself is confidential, and I wouldn't want you relating to anybody that district counsel told me this, but the mere fact that you got the information in a confidential communication from me doesn't mean the information itself is confidential, because some of it is just completely in the public record anyway.
Okay, why don't we move along
sure. At
this point, and maybe we can cover some of this. It's always good to get refreshed on all of this stuff. It's very complicated, and we do our best. Do we need to...
No action required.
No action required. Okay, in that case, will go to what I have moved to 7C. Consideration of will serve for Baywood Inn, 1370 2nd Street, Los Osos.
Yep, Chairman John Eric, I'm going to recuse myself. I don't have a financial interest in this property, nor with the property owner, but I have been involved in litigation on this particular property, so I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay, Director Ohilski has recused himself. Okay, our district engineer, Rob Miller, is here to give a report. Rob?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. The Baywood Inn is a property located at 1370 2nd Street, as described in the staff report. Baywood Inn has been operating for many years in that location, and this actually came up very early in the life of the district, so there's some old history here to discuss briefly, if you'll bear with me. Back in 2001, a conditional will serve was granted to the inn for an expansion of their number of rooms. And in the way of background, of course, since 1988, the community has been under a moratorium for the addition of additional sewer-creating fixtures. And so when a business wanted to accomplish some type of an expansion, they had to identify uses or fixtures within the building that had to be eliminated in order to accommodate that expansion. An analysis of that eliminated use then had to be submitted to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, who had to be convinced that, yes, indeed, less wastewater would be flowing from this facility after the work is done than it is currently today. And staff had to review that and provide a letter before you could get anywhere with the county land use process. So in the case of the Baywood Inn, that was done. They actually eliminated a restaurant use that was deemed to be equivalent to the addition of 19 rooms at the inn. And this had a lot of discussion back in 2001 and where the district had granted a conditional will serve. So if you fast forward to today, those regional board that regional board analysis still stands, and the proposed use of the inn to add additional rooms is still being offset by the elimination of the commercial kitchen and restaurant function that was there. Although in this case, the inn is proposing an expansion of 6 rooms as opposed to the 19 that were authorized by the Regional Water Board. So they're an existing district customer in this case. This is not an undeveloped property that's proposing a new use. It's an existing property where they're actually, the only thing they need from the district is an amended fire service line, adding an additional hydrant and then improving their fire sprinkler system. But because the county requires them to provide a current will serve, they were not able to use previous documentation in order to pull a building permit. So what staff has done is we've looked back at the original regional board approvals. We concur that their proposed use has been offset by the elimination of the commercial kitchen and restaurant function there. And we've drafted a draft will serve, which is a very simple document that basically confirms that we'll continue to serve that property with water, and they will have to meet our standards for improvements when they add the additional fire line to our satisfaction. So staff's recommendation at this point is to approve the will serve for the Baywood Inn. And if you wish to have any other action, such as denying the will serve, we do recommend that you direct staff to bring back findings for that denial as opposed to doing that this evening. So be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Real fast, are we in a quasi-judicial mode with this? Is this an appeal or is this direct?
This would be direct.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board for staff? I have a couple questions.
Sure.
So can you explain why, I mean, you mentioned one thing about they already have service. Can you explain why this is different than what we've said we were not going to do in our drought resolution.
Sure. Our drought resolution speaks to what's called intent to serve letters, and our will serve process is two steps. The intent to serve is at a conceptual level where, say, an undeveloped piece of property is proposing an expansion in use, and they don't currently have water service to that property. In order to establish a new service, we start with an intent to serve process, which identifies all the things that they have to do, the conditions they have to meet, such as go get a coastal permit or mitigate your use by offsetting it through such and such a method. And once they have that intent to serve, they go fulfill all the conditions, and then we'd consider a will serve, which is this step. But for an existing customer, we don't go through that same process because they're an existing customer. And in this case, having offset their use, staff's proposing just a straight will serve process.
And the offsets that they did with in respect to the regional board is aimed at, for lack of a better way of putting it, water out, right? And part of that is the water in that we're going to give them, but it's not exactly the same thing, right?
Right, not exactly the same thing, though in the case of a commercial use where really the addition is of indoor fixtures, the domestic use coming in would be roughly equivalent to the wastewater going out, at least 90% of it. And in the case where they're not going all the way up to the 19 rooms, but only proposing 6 of those 19, we felt that it was on firm footing.
And the expanded line is part of the need for that is for a fire sprinkler safety purpose. Is that correct?
Correct. So two things relating to fire. One is an improved service main to their fire sprinkler system, and the other is an addition of a new fire hydrant, which, of course, will also benefit the surrounding uses, and that's a CAL FIRE condition on the project.
Okay, I don't have any other questions. Is anybody else from the board?
Yeah, I do, actually. When the restaurant went out of business in 2001, is that kind of what I'm following here?
Yeah, I believe that's the time frame. I don't have the exact dates of that. I mean, that even predates.
After the water board's letter.
Yeah.
Okay, it's confusing because the water board chooses to weigh in sometimes and not others, and it seems like water quality is typically where they get involved. Like you said, water out, not supply issues. They've backed off when we've asked them to get involved with supply issues. So I'm not really sure that letter means a whole lot to this. I guess I'm just nervous because all of this came about way before we focused on water supply issues and the whole adjudicated basin and that kind of thing. So it's a different time.
Understood.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Okay, then we'll open to public comment. This is for public comment on will serve for the Baywood Inn, 3 minutes per speaker.
Hi.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Benson. I'm a Los Osos resident and the owner of the Baywood Inn at 2nd Street in Baywood. As part of our expansion plan that was approved by the county and the Coastal Commission in 2007, we want to add 6 additional rooms to the Baywood Inn. At this point, the county is ready to issue the building permit. Before the permit can be issued, the water district will serve letter for fire service is needed. As you may know, fire service is a separate connection to the water main. It's not it's a new connection completely. It's not the existing domestic water service. And it provides water to the automatic fire suppression system, the sprinkler system, in a building, and of course we're adding another fire hydrant as a result of that, and that is the need. And I just want to make it clear that we're not asking for any additional domestic water use. We're not asking for a will serve for domestic water. The addition will not be using any water beyond what has historically been used at the site. The only will serve letter we need is for fire suppression. We don't want to touch our existing, if possible, our existing domestic water service. It is fine. It's a large 2-inch line coming into the building, as was sized up for the restaurant and Baywood Inn rooms. For your information, the Baywood Inn is connected to and uses the Los Osos sewer system. Every toilet, faucet, and shower head has been retrofitted. As part of our expansion, we'll be reusing about 10,000 gallons of underground storage tanks that were used for septic system storage for rainwater runoff. We believe with low water landscape, we'll be able to seriously reduce our use of domestic water. We look forward to starting construction this fall, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Benson, since he's basically the proponent here, even though we're not doing it that way? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I do, too, have some questions. I'm not sure that you can answer them, but maybe they might be more county questions. And I know, I'm sorry that Marshall has left, because Marshall was around back in this time. And Chuck, when I say La Patisserie, that's the restaurant. I don't remember it being called Waterside Cafe for very long. So it was a small restaurant. The I never bought the 19-room equivalents, but he's only asking for 6 today. I know that the restaurant space now houses some rooms that were inside that structure. I hope he gets his 6 rooms. What is the new norm is the 2-to-1 retrofit, and that you are offsetting your use, not 1-to-1, not a historic, as Mr. Benson pointed out, that we're not going to use any more water. No, you're not supposed to use more water. In fact, you're supposed to conserve on a 2-to-1 basis for the new use. So analogous to this is the McDonald's and the bank. The bank had a use. That use was retired, and they had to show the landscape use that had continued after the bank closed for nearly 10 years. This is the new norm. And so I'm curious how even the county is ready to do this, in that McDonald's had to retrofit to cover its use. Now Starbucks, of course. But that's the question in my mind, is if you're going to do this, it has to be a level playing field for all expansions and new development. And this meets that test. And if you can't maybe deny it, I think you could ask some questions and condition the approval upon your satisfaction with the answers. But the new use or expanded use should be retrofitting on a 2-to-1 level. Because this is in the Los Osos CSD boundary or basin or water district, you have the historic records for this property. So you should be able to do the analysis to show that this project's actually going to save water and not use that historic number. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Board. Patrick McGibney, Baywood Park. If you're seriously considering sending out this will serve letter, you must have already confirmed there is sufficient water supply. I would be very interested in knowing what metrics do you use to reach this conclusion. I am glad this is a community service district and you do answer questions of your community. I have a few questions mixed with some comments that I would like answered before your deliberations. If you need clarification, please let me know and bear with me. This letter from the general manager you've asked to approve confirms sufficient water supply and capacity to serve the referenced project. It then lists a few conditions, but I don't see a condition that saltwater intrusion has stopped or is reversed. Why is that condition not included? Mr. Miller, I believe you said that the BMC meeting, based on the latest data, seawater intrusion hasn't stopped and that the metric shows it has gotten worse. Please comment. How then can the CSD and the general manager confirm a sufficient water supply for more development? You can't even confirm sufficient water supply for the existing development for the people that live here already. Aren't we in a stage three of the Los Osos Water Wastewater Project and the storage contingency plan, which says that no new connections will be allowed? Isn't it splitting hairs to suggest there's a difference between a new intent to serve notice and this one? The point is that this is a new development requesting to use more water. What can be the rationalization? Aren't the first two immediate goals of the basin plan to stop or reverse seawater intrusion and to ensure a sustainability water supply for the existing population? Doesn't the basin plan provide metrics to tell us when seawater intrusion has stopped? Isn't the CSD party to the basin plan? Then why are you making up new criteria to say when there is sufficient water supply? The old water board approval doesn't apply. That applies only to discharges into the septic system. The water board doesn't care if they have or if we have enough water, only that we don't discharge. The property has retrofitted toilet, shower heads, and faucets. I don't see the relevance. It was required to do so before hooking up to the sewer. Historical usage doesn't have anything to do with the current standards. We've been through the worst drought in history since the earlier will serve letter was approved before it expired, and now we have much different standards. It's doubtful that removing the restaurant reduced water to below these new standards. Keep it simple. Don't approve any will serves until basin metrics show seawater intrusion is reversed. The basin conservation plan is fully in effect. We have enough water for the people who live here, and there's enough additional water for more development.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson, I want to agree with what Patrick said, but I want to add another point about his historical consumption. It was mentioned at the Basin Management Committee meeting, there was a slide on the overhead that the chloride metric hasn't come down at all. It's actually sloping dramatically up. One thing, as a member of the rate committee, with Rob Miller and Ron Munns, that we discovered at our last meeting is 7 years ago when we did the first rate study, consumption in the district was over 300,000 units. Consumption now, at this moment in time, as of last year, 145,000 units. More than half of a reduction, and the metric hasn't been affected at all. And I've asked this question for years. Are we beyond the point of no return? I don't know how you can add more toilets in this town when seawater intrusion has not been stopped or reversed. And we're not anywhere near the point of it being stopped based on those presentations at the Basin Management Committee. But to go from over 300,000 units to 145, and it looks like there's been no impact, if you don't think that's a serious consideration in this, then you do what you want.
Thank you.
Lynette Tornotsky, Los Osos. I don't really have a dog in this fight, but I think Mr. Benson has waited long enough. He abided by all the rules that were laid out for him, and then the sole sewer thing happened. And it just seems crazy that people outside of the prohibition zone can go ahead and put wells in and we would be denying someone who's waited so long to add six lousy rooms when he could have had 19. So I really urge you to go ahead and issue this will serve.
Thank you. Any other public comment on Baywood Inn? Okay, I'm going to close public comment. Rob, is there anything you'd like to respond to?
Obviously, this is a very interesting and important public discussion. With respect to water supply metrics, yes, we have confirmed that in the lower aquifer, we do have continuing chloride levels, and we're tracking that every 6 months with the fall data out here shortly after that's peer-reviewed. Our Stage 3 water shortage contingency plan is specific to new connections and to intent-to-serve letters as opposed to a will-serve letter like this, so that wouldn't strictly apply. I know some folks might think that that's splitting hairs, but I think the distinction is important, that intent-to-serve process is what you go through when you're proposing a new project into the planning process, whereas this one has been through the coastal development permit process and is ready for a building permit. As to the applicability of the Water Board letter, I didn't mean to imply that just because the Water Board approved the use that directly translates to water. It was more speaking to the equivalency of the historical use compared to the proposed use as opposed to reanalyzing it. The thought was that given that their engineering staff had concluded that 19 rooms was equivalent to the removed kitchen and restaurant, that six rooms would be readily equivalent without reanalyzing the numbers. So that was staff's intent. Be happy to answer any further questions.
In the aggregate, are they using less or more? Would they be using less or more water?
So if you consider the historic use, six rooms would be less water than a restaurant in general when you consider the historic use.
That sounds like it's spoken kind of on a general sense, not a specific, this is the water use from this restaurant.
Yeah, I think
because
that's
La Patisserie, I don't remember that being a full-fledged restaurant. And I'm also disturbed by the fact that I heard that the restaurant had been converted, some of that space is now rooms. Does that mean that there are more rooms than were originally approved for the development?
My understanding is that the only addition of rooms is the six rooms that are being proposed. I believe that's the case.
So the restaurant space is still there and maybe could be turned back into a restaurant? I shouldn't be asking you that. I don't know why, because that's not your business.
I'm not sure, but you are correct in that originally they had provided physical water data as to the use in the restaurant to make that equivalency. And so to some extent, I am relying upon that. I can tell you that for most restaurants, and there are a number that I've worked on, small restaurants, they generally use in the neighborhood of 1,000 to 1,500 gallons a day, depending on their success as a restaurant. And if you'd compare that to six rooms, it's probably half. But I'm using general numbers there.
I guess my question is, the difference to me between this and a new one is there is a connection. We can't order them not to use whatever quantity of water. It would just be that this particular use requires this letter because it has to do with fire. So it's all kind of angels dancing on the head of a pin either way you look at it. It's water from a restaurant from 15 years ago, but it's also complementing, it's like a bureaucratic requirement of a different pipe size for fire. I mean, if that weren't there, and correct me if I'm wrong, if that weren't there, they could just draw the water through the other existing pipe. The problem is compliance with fire code. It's there's nothing we have right now that would stop that use. It's a non-water issue, kind of.
So in other words, if the county hadn't required hadn't requested a new will serve letter, then you're right, the existing service size is sufficient to support that use. But because they are requesting that, staff thought it important to bring the whole issue forward.
Okay, thoughts from the board?
it seems to me that the request is reasonable because, in fact, at his location, he's using less water and he's improved the operation of the water system.
So our options are approve, deny, condition. What are our options?
Broadly, your options are approve, deny, condition. The staff has recommended conditions of approval. Those are contained in the letter. Your district engineer, I will say after consultation with me before on the presentation, advised you that if you were inclined to deny, we would prefer that you put it over to the next meeting so that we can come back with proposed findings for a denial.
Okay, and when we did the last intent to serve letter before the drought ordinance put that on ice, we had in that specific intent to serve letter conditions that required a 2-to-1 offset, but we never said, hey, that's our policy. Does that matter, or has a precedent been set?
Well, I know the answer to that, and most of the time people don't like the answer, but I give the same answer anyway. It's not a legal precedent in that sense. So that would not bind you in any sense here, either for or against. For instance, if you were convinced that that set the standard, then that letter would no more demand that you grant the application then deny it. It's more of a policy and political issue than it is a legal issue.
Right. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Benson?
Hi.
Can you come up?
Hi again.
Hi, thank you.
Okay, I think you heard what I said a minute ago. You're going to be using less water than 8 months ago or 2 months ago.
Well,
because you've basically modernized your water system throughout the facility.
Well,
to use less water, is that incorrect?
That's true because of the retrofit, but
yeah.
The initial analysis occurred in, I don't know, I think it was 2000. Where we actually measured the water use of the restaurant and subtracted that out, and then based on our occupancy, we're able to review that with the Water Quality Control Board, and they said, okay, this is what you're saving. This turns out to be 19 hotel units based on the usage per day on average of an occupied hotel unit. And you have to design for peak, so we designed for peak on that. As far as units now, we have... we started out with 15 units where the restaurant stands. We replaced it with 3 units, so that was 3 of the 19. Recently, we removed a unit to expand our lobby, so now we're down to 17. And with the 6 units, we'll have a total of 23 units.
How does one measure? I mean, this is supposed to go to a fire system, which, yes, God willing, doesn't come on.
Right.
Is that correct?
So, correct. And there's no meter on the fire line.
So this new line would only draw water...
when there's a fire.
When there's an emergency.
And furthermore, if you look at what it does, it localizes the fire. So if you have a fire in one part of the building, it's not allowed to spread. The sprinkler actually extinguishes the flames. Furthermore, since the fire doesn't spread and you're not connecting to a hydrant, when the truck comes there, the fire is usually out. And I have first-hand experience with this, unfortunately. The fire is out when the truck gets there because the sprinkler has extinguished it. If the fire was allowed to spread, the truck would be pumping thousands of gallons to put out the expanded fire. So it is a water saver.
And I'm sorry if this has already been mentioned. The fire hydrant, this is a new fire hydrant?
New fire hydrant, yes.
And where exactly is it going to be? Is it going to be on 2nd Street there? Or?
It has to be within 20 feet. There's some, maybe you remember that code.
Cal Fire normally asks that the fire hydrant would be within 50 feet of the fire department connection. depending on what jurisdiction you're in. We usually try to put them closer, like within 5 feet. So it will be right there on 2nd Street fronting the development.
Thank you. Okay. Well, we have our possibilities. So let's hear some thoughts.
I'm just troubled because of that first statement in the letter. The Community Services District confirms sufficient water supply and capacity to serve the above reference project. We don't know if we have enough water to serve the existing community, and I have a real hard time getting past that. I like the idea of this development. I like the idea of new things coming to town. I wish we had more restaurants. But I'm a little nervous about starting to approve these things. We haven't even seen last fall's monitoring data yet. We're still waiting for that last snapshot of where our chloride metrics and everything else is. So you can kind of tell where I'm headed with this. I think it's something we need to bring back next time and talk about when we would be comfortable looking at development. Are we going to use the same standards the Basin Management Committee is establishing? We can't even find a way to fund the conservation program that the Basin Management Committee has established. And in my mind, that's the quickest way to do development. It's the only source of new water is conservation like this. It sounds ironic that I'm... But until we see metrics that say salt water is stopped, I'm a little nervous about this.
Vice President Millage, you have any thoughts?
The fire line is a new requirement. God willing, and the creek don't rise, as we say back where I come from, it will never be used. It seems like a reasonable request to me.
Okay, well, we can entertain a motion at any time. I'm just going to go ahead and say what I think. I'm, in case you can't tell, I'm a little torn by this because I share the concerns about the water supply. It is not reversed, the saltwater intrusion yet. And despite all the rain, we basically have to double what we have to be out of our own standard for a drought. On the other hand, this is a safety issue. It would benefit the surrounding area, and it might not be used. So I think maybe this got off onto a bit of a wrong foot talking about the regional board and the sewer offsets and everything, because that's not really our thing. Our thing, especially right now, is what's coming out of the ground. And I think in our drought resolution, the section that it's under, one of the first things we're supposed to provide for is public safety uses like fire. So it's almost like if we can enhance fire use or fire safety, it adds this whole other dimension to it for me. So let's hear what, if somebody wants to make a motion, Director Tornatsky.
I would move we accept a request as stated, to go along with what the business owner wants to do.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
There's a second. Is there any discussion? Is this 3 votes?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just clarifying because we're...
Yeah, 2-2 would be no action. We wouldn't have direction to staff.
Right. Okay.
Director Tornatsky.
Yes.
Vice President Millage.
Yes.
Director Sasanya.
No.
President Storm.
Yes. Okay, Rob, stick around just for a minute. just in case we have anything else for you. I'm the one that does the French leave, remember? Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you're here for the dog park, could you raise your hand? So welcome, and I apologize for the government process here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give the dog park its own set of public comment, but that's going to be on item number 10. So I need to get my paid on the clock people out of here as soon as I can. So first we'll have public comment for items not on the agenda. The dog park is on the agenda, so this isn't the time yet. If you have something else that you'd like to speak about right now, let's do it. Mr. Best.
Steve Best. Not speaking specifically on the agenda of the lease or any other agreements on the for the agenda that are going to be discussed, but wanted to make the announcement that the community has come together and developed a nonprofit group to work with the community service districts and to help inspire, create, volunteer, and to serve the community and to beautify the community, to enhance the community with its pleasures and enjoyment for Los Osos. And there are so many reasons why we need a dog park in this town, and we have Los Osos has come together and is putting together a nonprofit group that is going to help address the issues and the needs of our town, and we're looking forward to having a very successful and cooperative relationship with the CSD in making this happen. And we are very happy to be able to work with the CSD on making this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment for items not on the agenda?
Confused. This is for not on the agenda, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Just quickly, I wasn't here at your January meeting, so I wasn't able to announce this, but as I'm speaking now as president of People Helping People, needs and wishes this year, even with the rain all day, was $1,300 above last year. $39,400 and a few cents. And as you know, or heard me say before, there's no overhead for this event, so all $39,400 went to the charities that benefited from the event. On another note, just before this meeting, the bell ringers of Los Osos for Salvation Army got together to hear the announcement of the total for bell ringing in Los Osos, and after 6-7 years of stagnant results, good results, but stagnant. This is the fifth year in a row that we broke the record for Los Osos, $17,472.87. I don't know why that's embedded in my head, but I've said it so many times in the last month, it's in there. So thank you to all the bell ringers. The community was unbelievably generous this year. Christmas Eve alone, the kettles had over $1,100 in it, but 470 singles alone. So that tells you how many people came by and put money in. Great group of volunteers. The last thing I just want to mention is People Helping People, besides those two things, we also kind of roughly came up with a number that we gave out the equivalent of 10 to 12,000 bags of food at the Wednesday food giveaway. And we currently have about 150 pieces of medical equipment out in the community. We're an organization with no paid staff and very little overhead, but very generous donors. I think we do a tremendous amount of work, and it's not me, it's the volunteers. We have unbelievable contingent of volunteers. So thank them all. I hope we have just as successful a year. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you. Any other public comment for items not on the agenda? Okay. I'm going to close public comment for items not on the agenda. And next is administrative and committee reports. A, fire department report. Chief Taylor, welcome.
Good evening, Mr. President, Ms. Vice President, honorable directors. I'm Josh Taylor, your battalion chief for CAL FIRE and South Bay Fire Department. I'd like to talk about our emergency activity for December as well as our annual report. In the month of December, we went to 141 calls and 13 simultaneous calls. Our company 15 was called back to this fire station for a total of 12 times. Station 15, South Bay, responded to 1,251 calls last year for service with 78 simultaneous calls. Company 15 was called to cover the station or respond to emergencies in 2016, a total of 101 times. With that, I'd like to also add, we're getting a little bit of rain today, and for all those that are listening on AGP, with the ground saturated, the water will come up quite quickly. And for those of you that know, I'm new to the area, but I've learned about Lake Ramona. And so just be cautious. 6 inches of water running can pick you up off your feet, and up to 1 to 2 feet of water in a vehicle, even an SUV or a truck, can pick it up and take it away. So just be cautious of that. On December 27th, we had one of our firefighter paramedics. He resigned from CAL FIRE and went to another fire agency in Santa Barbara County. We're currently going through our 9 new reserve hires for the Los Osos Community Services District, and they're currently in their training right now. During the month of December, as well as in November, I reported Station 15 was in cooperation with KSPY and the County Firefighters Benevolent Association. They continued with the Operation Santa Claus and Season of Hope charity events, collecting toys and food for the disadvantaged. For training, on December 9th, my executive assistant, Harmony Brown, attended a quarterly meeting in Monrovia for the California Fire Chiefs Executive Assistance Group. She also attended with the Pismo Beach Executive Assistant, as well as Chief Jalbert's Executive Assistant. And finally, in our fire prevention, we had a fire station tour in early December, and in December, we also attended the Los Osos Holiday Parade, and there's a picture inside the board packet. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Sheriff Department report. Welcome.
It's always hard to follow the firemen anyways. I'm J.D. Cronin. I'm the sergeant here in Los Osos. I was gone for about a year at the watch commander's office, just transferred back this month, and I'm very happy to be back. This report's from January 5 to February 2. 501 calls for service in Los Osos. That's 40 traffic stops by deputies on vehicles, either suspicious or vehicle code violations. 11 pedestrian contacts where a deputy stopped a person on foot to talk to them. 14 alarm calls, 10 residential, 4 business, no losses, so that's great. 43 disturbing the peace calls. That's everything from loud music to family fights. We had 4 vandalisms. One on the 9th, a broken window to a classroom at Baywood Elementary. They didn't take anything. Could very well have been a basketball. The 16th, a broken window at a classroom at Los Osos Middle School. That was a child having a bad day. On the 17th, a broken window to a building and tables turned upside down at Monarch Grove Elementary. So everybody got a little piece this month. Rear window of a vehicle smashed in the 1100 block of 10th. We had 3 burglaries, one in the 1300 block of 2nd Street in Baywood. Suspects entered the business the previous night through an unsecured window, stole a computer tablet from the front counter of the business. theft of a chainsaw from a tool shed in the backyard in the 1800 block of 9th. And victim reported miscellaneous items stolen from a commercial storage unit in the 2000 block of Mountain View. We had 8 thefts from unlocked cars, still unlocked cars. Parcel stolen from the front porch of a residence, not uncommon just around Christmas. One theft of license plates from a car, a theft of a water pump from a pickup truck bed, and a theft of money from a residence by a roommate of a victim. We had one battery. That's when somebody's hand hits somebody else's head. Two neighbors got into a fight over items stored in a driveway at a residence in the 300 block of Highland. That report was filed with the DA's office. We had 5 domestic violence incidents reported. Those were all investigated. Those I'm not going to go into the specifics on, but the two that probably made the most headlines was the robbery on the 19th in the 1500 block of 4th Street. Victim reported several men wearing ski masks forced their way into his home, taking several items before driving away. No weapons were involved, and the victim was not harmed. An investigation was begun by our patrol deputies here in Los Osos and detectives from San Luis, the main station, and the leads got them to a car in North Morro Bay. We got some help from Morro Bay PD, CHP, and State Parks. During a search of the area near the vehicle, found 2 suspects located near San Jacinto and Main Street in Morro Bay. 34-year-old Joshua William Weber and 28-year-old Bryce Aramis Mueller, both of Atascadero. Weber was arrested for robbery and burglary. Mueller was arrested for robbery. The investigation determined that at least 2 other men were involved in the robbery. We're actively seeking them. The other big one was a child pornography arrest. We got information when we were contacted by an agency in Minnesota regarding a report of a man in Los Osos exchanging nude photographs with 2 10-year-old girls over the internet. The suspect was sending child porn back to the 2 girls. He was identified as 27-year-old Ian Trent Shaw Anderson of Los Osos, not originally from here, but he was residing here at the time. During the course of the investigation, it was discovered that a 16-year-old female victim in San Luis County had been sexually assaulted by Anderson. It's believed he used that victim to manufacture child porn for distribution. Detective Serge served a search warrant at his home in the 1900 block of 11th. We took cell phones, a tablet, 3 laptops, and on one cell phone alone, detectives found hundreds of commercial and homemade images of prepubescent children engaged in sexual acts. The rest of the seized electronics will be forensically analyzed for child porn. He was arrested for possession, distribution, and manufacture of child pornography. We made 24 arrests in Los Osos during this period, as we spoke of. 6 for domestic violence, 6 warrants, 5 drunk in public, and this doesn't include New Year's, so that's all by themselves. 2 arrests for robbery, as we talked about, arrests for possession, manufacture, and distribution of child porn. We talked about that. 1 for possession of meth, 1 for child endangerment, 1 for resisting or obstructing a peace officer, and 1 for abuse of the 911 system. I don't know whether that was calling for pizzas or what that was all about. We're currently staffed up at 1 commander, 2 sergeants. There's now 2 of us out here, myself, and you'll meet him eventually, Sergeant Scotto. We've got 19 deputies, 1 school resource officer, 1 deputy on light duty, and 2 off work with injuries. We've got 5 deputies on training between the 3 patrol stations. That's Oceano and here in Templeton. And we've got 11 deputy sheriff vacancies with 6 laterals from other agencies going through the hiring process at some point. So we've still got a little ways to go before we can get the department back up to full staff. That's about it. It was kind of a busy month, actually. 500 calls is pretty respectable. Anybody got any questions? Members of the board, anybody in the audience?
Welcome back.
Okay.
Oh, it's good to be back. Not a big fan of having to drive all the way through San Luis to come here every day instead of being able to cut over 41, but I'm sure Windsor will get that cleaned up eventually.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Okay, and now...
If anybody wants, come by the station, say hi, get to know me. I'm a great guy. Josh will tell you.
Okay, Utilities Department report.
Good evening. I'm Margaret Faulkner, and I'm here to report on the Water Department, the Utilities Department, mainly water. And so the total production in water was 12.9 million gallons. This is for the month of December 2016. And it represents an increase of approximately 19% when compared to last year at this time. And using the state's formula, this time the residential customers came out to use approximately 56 gallons per person per day. Production and runtime hour tables are at the bottom of the first page. And 43% of the water service area was billed for approximately 9.3 million gallons. And that's for consumption between November 9th and January 10th. And this generated approximately $128,300 in revenue. So these figures represent an increase in consumption by almost 5% and an increase in revenue by approximately 18%. As far as drainage is concerned, as you know, the county has a new link to the rain and reservoir reports, and I was able to query the database and get some of the Los Osos landfill totals. And since the water shortage contingency calendar goes from, you know, April 1st through March 31st, I was able to get that information. We'll be able to bring that forward to you in the next report. And I'm still waiting to hear about Vista and Bay Ridge. And I just filled another report, a survey out for them tonight. So
you should call them the Godot lots.
Anyway, this concludes my report for utilities tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for getting that rainfall information. That'll be helpful going forward.
Yes.
Any questions from the board?
Yes, I have a couple.
Chuck.
I guess one, I just have a concern. Palisades usage is starting to creep back up, and I know some of that's the upper aquifer at South Bay hasn't worked out. Third Street's still offline, which gets me back to that pollutant is, hexavalent chromide or
chrome-6.
That showed up in the 8th Street upper aquifer well that we've just drilled, not in production yet. We're going to be blending that, even though the amounts that tested there were higher than the 3rd Street well. So we're not blending 3rd Street, but we're going to blend the 8th Street. And I guess I'm just curious about all that.
Do you want to handle it?
Sure. I think he's anxious too. Yeah.
He might want to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the case of 3rd Street, we didn't have the benefit of a blending source anywhere near there. We'd have to run a pipeline, a blending pipeline, all the way back to 8th Street. So that was an expensive endeavor. May someday come before you, but in the case of 8th Street, you had the blending source within a few feet.
Okay.
And also the South Bay Upper Aquifer well, the nitrate analyzer, had to be shipped back to Detroit to be recalibrated.
Oh,
so it was out for 2 months.
Yeah. That may be back in production then again.
It is.
Great. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. General Manager's report. Quickly.
You want me to be quick?
Yeah.
Has everybody read it? I can be quick. I'm sure everybody has read it. In short, water, fire, and admin, we've been going through the process of a new bookkeeper, painfully going through a process of a new payroll system. It's going to get done. There's some kinks, but they're working out. It gets better and better every payroll. As far as the bookkeeper is concerned, Warmer Dam is doing their best to help us, but they've definitely moved on. Stilts has provided us with the first warrant report. We've gone to transition to the 30-day payout system so that everybody has a chance to see what we're paying. We had it set up so that you can see what we had to pay to get ahead so that we're not behind, if that makes sense. And then once we printed the report, it reshuffled everything, so I apologize that the what we had to pay early is not up on top, but that will happen next time. As far as water specifically goes, just so you, everybody knows, we did have a problem with a pump on 8th Street. We're trying to, replacing it is extremely expensive. As you can see, it's somewhere about $50,000. FRM has actually offered to refurbish that pump. And I don't even want to say a number because, you know, we can't hold me to that. But we're looking at something under $15,000 to refurbish it. So that's what we're waiting on. We'll keep everybody updated. But refurbishing the pump, they said, would be worth it because the motor still works. The pump system still works. There's just the other items aren't working very well. So we'll get back to you on that. As far as fire goes, you'll notice that under 11H, we have the fire lateral for the building that needs to get done for the sewer. And $9,500 is the quote, the best quote that we got from John Madonna Construction. That's going to be coming out of a sewer septic maintenance fund that we had for that building. And there's about $17,000 in that budget. So we'll be able to pull it out of there. So this isn't a surprise. As far as the auditors go, as Adam mentioned, we have the asset list was finally completed, and they approved it, and they've gone through and made sure that everything is up to date. We're going to try to present a process so that way as assets get bought, we'll put something in place so that way the bookkeeper knows if something happens to an asset, the bookkeeper knows so that we can do a better job keeping track of, you know, assets going up and down. As far as Parks and Rec go, because I know that's why everybody's here, we met with the county, and they are very excited to help us. They want to help us. They're excited to work with us on the land at the park, at the local community park, and we hope to RFP out as many items as we can. I'm going to try to get as many of the items that we need to prepare for that. That won't cost us anything, and we'll come back to you with costs so that we know if it will cost us anything to get this going. But in the meantime, the good news is the county wants to give us the lease, and it will be nothing.
Okay. Thank you.
That's as fast as I could do.
District Council.
No report.
All right.
LOCAC.
Lynette Tornotsky, our chairperson from LOCAC, Jeffrey Weir, asked if I would give the LOCAC reports, as I am the secretary for LOCAC, so that's why I'm here. I'll start with, this is going to be very condensed, so you can find the full minutes on our website, locac.info. Chairperson Weir reminded us we have four vacancies that we need to fill, so two people have resigned, one of whom is sitting at the board here. So I'm hoping you'll go to our website and take a look to see what district you're in, and we need help. I won't do the sheriff's report. He just gave one, the highway patrol report. The thing that came out of that was Caltrans should be the people called if detour signage on roads is inadequate. There have been some complaints because of all the roads that have been closed, but if something isn't working, call Caltrans. Public Works has not been attending our Traffic and Circulation Committee meetings because they're spread very thin. And they'll only come out when something is major. So the conduit to get information to Public Works staff is to call Bruce Gibson's legislative assistant, Sherry McKee, and Bruce will take the information to Public Works. Supervisor Gibson's report, I'll skip to the most important part of it, which was the new library that's planned for Los Osos. We have the highest circulation rate in the county, and the building is less than half of the size that it should be. So the county and friends of the Los Osos Library are partnering 50-50 to build a new library. Right now they're scoping out a new project, what it should be, and looking at sites. Let's see. I won't go into the dog park thing. I mentioned that before, and you're hearing a lot about that. It was mentioned that there was a lot of activity on the end of the Palisades property at the end of Tri-W. Off-road vehicles are ruining the property at the end of Palisades Avenue. It's important, even if the sheriff can't dispatch somebody, to report it, because the reports are logged to give a magnitude to the problem. So if you do know the property owners, please notify them. Also, there was no LOCSD report at our LOCAC meeting, so I'm hoping that might be corrected in the future. I won't talk about the chamber report because I see Steve Vincent over here. Carrie Brown had a live web page up on the screen showing us how to use Permit View. That's where you go to find out information on properties in the county. It's actually pretty easy to use. They have a video on the website that will show you how to use it. So if you have some questions about property, you can just really zoom in on the map and find out about it. Also, Supervisor Gibson said that about 80% of the sewer connections were done. On the consent calendar, we had a minor use permit that was to add some square footage to an existing residence and a detached garage. It went through committee with no problem, and LOCAC approved that we send a letter supporting that project. A little more difficult was a proposed minor use permit to construct a new home, but it's outside of the prohibition zone. So we had a lot of questions at committee that were not filled out on the paperwork, but we were not able to find out the answers to these. They will all be caught at the county level, and really there was no reason we couldn't approve the project. So we did ask for a letter to go to the county that we supported the project. There was another thing on the agenda about the tree and landscape committee that David Hunter, the chairperson, brought forward. They had discussed rather thoroughly the new county's Oak Woodland Protection Ordinance, which is about to expire. It's going to the Planning Commission, and public input would be very helpful there. The committee thought that there wasn't enough protection for enough types of trees and that the penalties were not strong enough. So Chairperson Weir and Chairperson of the committee, David Hunter, wrote a letter to the Planning Commission indicating the concerns of LOCAC. The other main thing that came up was the Traffic and Circulation Committee had been in contact with the Slo County Bicycle Advisory Committee. There's a portion of Los Osos Valley Road between Broderson and Monarch Grove School that the Class 2 bike lane just disappeared. That was during the sewer project and also when there was a right turnout lane done on Pine Street. Right now, it allows parking, which was not there before, and there has been some confusion and danger to the bicyclists. So LOCAC crafted a letter, well, it will craft a letter, to put the bike lane back to a Class 2 bike lane, and Supervisor Gibson was very, very supportive of that. In fact, would like to see a Class 1 bike lane. The dog park, I will leave that to another discussion, and our next meeting will be February 23rd, 2017, and you all are invited. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? You can tell Jeff that great minds think alike, and I'll have a solution to our representation that is similar. Okay, Chamber of Commerce.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. I'm Steve Vincent. I'm on the director. I'm on the board of directors for the Los Osos Baywood Park Chamber of Commerce. The chamber held its annual community awards dinner and installation on January 13. Our new president is Dr. Christina Grimm, and our new president-elect is Chad Carroll. The chamber presented community awards for the Los Osos Pride Award, which went to celebrate Los Osos. The 2016 Business of the Year went to Copy, Spot, and More. The 2016 Volunteer of the Year went to Donna Asire, and the 2000 Citizen of the Year went to Albert Calizo. On behalf of the Chamber, I'd like to say thank you to this board for all your support of the installation dinner, as well as all of our events that we hold in the community. Speaking of which, our first big event is going to be the Business Expo. And that's going to be on March 17th at the South Bay Community Center, St. Patrick's Day. This is a great opportunity for our local businesses and organizations to meet local residents and distribute information, explain their services, and showcase their items for sale. The Shop Small Committee will be announcing and promoting a business of the month to help our local residents focus on shopping locally. Business of the month for February is Jules Comfy Closet, located behind Starbucks, close to the Los Osos Fitness. And the owners, Jim and Julie Lynch, invite you to come over and check out their store. And that's all I have.
I was really impressed by Mr. Calizo. He's quite an individual. Yes, and
absolutely.
And Christina Grimm's speech was excellent, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Before I go forward, can I call Richard? Can you come up and remind us where we are with your rate study and what we need to do moving forward? Thank you.
My rate study. Did you hear that, Rob? Ron Munns, Rob Miller, and I, we've met twice in person. We have another meeting scheduled for the 14th. Yes. Do you want the brief version?
Please.
Okay. We need a decision from you on what your proposed administrative allocations are going to be in the next budget year. I know you've talked about the 80-10-10 or the, but it's going, that information will have a big impact on where we go. We also need you to come up with a position, which I think you can do shortly, on the property tax allocation for the water department. I know there's been discussion of maybe half staying there, half going to fire, how it would draw down over a number of years. With respect, I'm just going to make a comment that we came up with at our last meeting. If the administrative allocation were to go to 80%, you're looking at roughly another $100,000 of expense on the expense side. Isn't that what we came up with, about 100, somewhere close to that? If you took half of the property tax revenue and you only did it in two-year increments, say $50,000 and $50,000, you've got a $150,000 swing right off the bat. The reason I mention that is you pumped 145,000 units last year. If you only increase the rates in each tier at $1, and you do those two things, you're at even. And we're just putting it out there. The other thing we need more information on is where we are with the water contracts, what revenue stream we're going to potentially realize, and if the county's going to have any charge for the delivery of that water, and if they're going to get away with no charge or whatever. And there's a number of questions there. At some point we can elaborate on this more if you need it at the committee level or whatever. And then I think the fourth thing, and Rob may have something else, but is where we are currently with reserves, and what your policy in the future is going to be with relation to budgets in the future with funding reserve line items in the future. You didn't fund all of the reserve line items this last fiscal year. And the reason this is important to us is in the current budget, if the capital projects were completed this fiscal year, which we don't believe they all will be, the $636,000 that was in capital reserve would have been wiped out, which means you're at zero. And you have a reserve policy that we kind of want to know, are we supposed to be using that reserve policy to re-implement reserves, replenish reserves, or do you want that number increased? And then Rob on the side is working on the capital improvement project list and where we are with that, and Ron's running the model, and I play devil advocate. is there anything else I missed, or do you think we got it? He thinks
very
we got
good.
It.
All right, thank you. Basin Management Committee.
We had our meeting. Rob, you can correct me when I say something wrong here. Given the hour here, I'm going to be relatively brief.
Thank you.
So we did have an update on the SGMA compliance, and the Water Board did not accept our boundary request for expanding the boundaries to cover what we think is the actual legal description of the basin. So the fringe areas are going to be dealt with by the county in a separate process, separate from the Basin Management Committee. There's not a lot of acreage in that area, but it's just not coterminous with our basin at this point. I guess, Robin, you correct me, I think we have the opportunity to go back in 2 years or something? 2018, yeah, okay. Well, I'm still thinking it's 2016, so. So we approved the budget, and then we had a community plan update. We actually spent a long time talking about our performance matrix that we had developed, and we discussed the previous two meetings. But Supervisor Gibson recommended that our input into the community plan update be more general rather than very, very performance-oriented. So we decided to take that approach. And Rob's supposed to bring us back some comments for our next meeting for our review and approval and submission to the county in the community plan update. And then the last item was the Water Conservation Program update. We talked about various funding opportunities available. The grant funding was not available. So that's where we left it. I think that's pretty much a quick recap of what we talked about. It was a relatively productive meeting, and I think we got through it relatively quickly.
Okay, thank you. Director's announcements and of district and community interest and reports on attendance at public meetings.
I can
trainings
do that
program,
one, too.
Conferences, and seminars.
I'll do that one, too. At least okay. I'll start off with that one.
Thank you.
So last Friday, we had our California Special Districts annual meeting. We had three of the directors were there, myself, Vice Chair Millage, and Director Liu. We had a good presentation. This is our annual meeting where we bring in members of the county staff to give us an update. We had Supervisor Arnold come in, and I thought she did a very, very good job of explaining the priorities and explaining how the county was going to operate in the upcoming year and what their priorities would be. We had Dave Flynn, the Assistant Director of Public Works, there give an update on interactions with the Public Works and the various special districts. I think the primary issue that he dealt with was flood control and how there was a lot of water running over private properties and how does that get addressed. We had Chris Palmer there, who's from the State Special Districts Association, and I'll be sending an email out to Ann in the next day. We have a special session that's going to be held that coming up, where it's a training session for a 2-day, and there's scholarships available for that for board members. So I'll forward that out to Ann. Ann will get that out. The deadline for scholarship applications is February 15th. So you get to go for free.
Where?
Santa Barbara. I believe it's Santa Barbara, if I'm not mistaken. It may be Solvang. It's somewhere in that area. I can't remember off the top of my head. Santa Barbara, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Fess Parker at Santa Barbara, you're right. So, yeah, there are scholarships available. Pay for all of your costs. All you'll have to pay for is your travel. And there's still available. And then we had John Greaser from the county's Energy Watch program talk about the programs that are available to subsidize energy programs with the various districts. Talked a little bit about the program that we were involved with them on. So that was a good thing. And then we closed with David Church, LAFCO, talking about SGMA compliance for the various groundwater basins. And I don't know if you two who were there have anything to add to that.
Okay. Anybody else do anything
interesting? Your first time there. It was good, right?
It was great.
Okay.
She blended well, very quickly.
Okay, that's it. I'm sorry.
Anybody else?
Okay. At their January board meeting, Cap Slow, I attended the board meeting. They asked me to serve for another year on that board. So if it's okay with this board, I'll serve another year with Cap Slow.
Okay. And were there any previously asked questions? Okay. Are there any polls? Okay. So what I'm going to do do you have a poll?
No, but I had just a couple quick questions about the warrant register. I mean, is that this appropriate time?
That
for
would
that?
Be great.
Okay. Let's see. Warrant register 26467 Coastal Roll-Off. Where is 7th and Farrell Street? There actually is. Farrell does connect to 7th all the way through, sort of. Because we have a roll-off there, and I'm just wondering what that's all about.
Well, that's where it used to be a well site. It's the utilities.
The well, okay.
And they just, when they get a lot of things together, they just get a roll-off out there to.
Okay. And then the other one, Brebs Builders, repairs labor and materials to this place.
Yes.
It looks like we've spent most of the allocation that we got from the landlord. This is all tied to the improvements that were part of the lease.
Yes. So we have, it's on. I'm not even thinking of how much we have left, but we have our numbers from last month. And so we still have that left over. I think it was well over, God, I have to guess,
well, it's
$1,600.
Not, it's, okay. I guess the question is, have we scratched the surface on the employees' break room?
No.
Have we even?
We have scratched the surface, but the problem is, and I have the bid and everything, but we're waiting on the fact that since we would be adding a fixture, which is the kitchen, which is a kitchen sink, that's kind of, I'm kind of trying to figure out, you know, how much can I do before I reach that point where we can't do it anymore. So I definitely don't want to scratch it. I want to approach it as, let's do everything that we can.
I just want to make sure that issue hasn't fallen off the table.
Oh, no, sir. Yeah. No,
okay,
absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you for bringing that up since we didn't have finance this time. So what I'm going to do at this time is I'm going to take public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and consent agenda, but not the dog park. And then we get through with that, we'll do all the dog park. Okay?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I had hoped that someone would have pulled 11E, the bylaw associated with the reconfiguration of the committee. Has some concern for me. I thought others might. Unfortunately, I don't think I'll get an opportunity to speak to the specifics of that, and I wish I could. With regard to the utility report, I know that some discussion was had last fall. I don't know if you guys are working on this in closed session with regard to Vista and Bay Ridge, but I'd like to see expenses cease over there in both places. I'd actually like to see the loans that were let to these two communities be transferred to the county somehow, and that you recover your reserves so that we can sort of take those funds out of the formula for the administrative draw because that will then impact the water rate structure. The mention of Palisades, I will always be on record as someone who says, shut that well down entirely. It is in the trough. It is the source of drawing seawater intrusion. The Chrome 6 has me concerned. That number is new, and I still don't hear anyone talking about looking for a source or how to remedy that other than to blend it away. It's still in our supply, albeit blended away. The warmer dam expense appears to have exceeded the contracts that were in front of your board. Maybe they've been amended since Mr. Campa, but that the $11,000 number was a surprise to me. Mr. Margetson's report on the water rate structure committee work, I appreciate them working very hard on that. Some of these formulas were brought to the committees and recommendations were made to your board, and I'm really surprised that in January and again in February, you're not having that discussion. I think, whether or not you adopt those formulas that were recommended or not, that discussion needs to be had by the five of you so that then either you can send it back to committee to massage some more or come up with your own formulas and then, of course, fold those into the water rate structure. So I said it earlier, I'll say it again. I'm sorry to see the committees be canceled as often as they have been.
Thank you.
Richard Marsden, I need some clarification for a number of reasons, but on this changes to the bylaws, people that were appointed for 2 years through the end of 2018, I noticed that there were certain names that didn't put in an application under this new system. Are they going to be an automatic pick? And I'll just bring up one example. Ron Munns is on the rate committee. He didn't, unless it's come in the last few days, he didn't submit a new application. He's a 218 term holder. If he's not reappointed and he didn't put in an application and he's not on the committee, then you don't have a member of the committee on the subcommittee. Rob's shaking his head in agreement, like, yeah. And I absolutely don't want to lose Ron on the technicality. So if that could be explained, the staff report was confusing, and I think there's some confusion in the whole process because I don't think anything was voted on necessarily at the last meeting, but if that could be addressed, I was hoping that would get pulled for that reason.
We're going to talk about all of that on 12A.
With the appointments?
With the appointments. Okay. It'll all be fine. Nope. Okay. So any other public comment on administrative and committee reports? Okay, with that, Rob, I think you may go. So again, I apologize for the delay. We have people who come to the meetings and we try to get them home as soon as possible. So now, dog park. Public comment on the dog park. Step up and be heard. 3 minutes each.
Good evening, Steve Best. I want to thank everybody for coming here tonight that's wanting to be supportive of the dog park. And I saw the handwriting on the wall some time back and realized that as things were moving forward, we needed to have a input from the community and start to have a cohesive force, a nonprofit interest from the community representing the community's interest in wanting to do a dog park. And so last 2 weeks ago, we started having some meetings, and it's been very successful. We've had some
some wonderful turnouts, and it's been really, really heartwarming to see the amount of energy that's going into this process. My interest in it is to have a very successful collaboration between the CSD and the community to have the kind of dog park that the community really wants and deserves. And my desire is to see the nonprofit group start, elect a board, and get all the support it needs with establishing its nonprofit status, and then move forward. My intention from there is to stay at arm's length, because my my ultimate interest is to be supportive of the work that needs to be done at the CSD. And so I plan to do everything I can, and hopefully I'll be available to serve in the committees as needed. So I'd like to have the rest of the community voice their support for the dog park, and for our efforts to be supportive and collaborative as possible with the CSD, and have a wonderful product at the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Susan Tuttle. I'm the bookkeeper for St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church and a member of the Pastoral Council. This property for the dog park abuts our property, and we do have some concerns. We are not opposed to it. We believe this is something that is necessary in our and needed in our community, but we are concerned about the noise. We have weddings, we have funerals, we have services, and we're concerned about that. We're also concerned about the parking, that people coming to the dog park will use our property, our parking lots to park, which can impact the people who are coming to our services. We also have a lot of children's activities that are going on during the week, and that is a concern for us. As it stands now, we already have problems with a lot of people who are walking their dogs, who are using our property, which is private property, as a cut-through to go to different areas, and we don't want to see that continue or get worse. And we are just simply asking respectfully if we could be involved with this planning so that our issues can be addressed. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Jim Kosvanek, and I'm a business owner for 12 years here and a significant other residence. Dog parks, well, first of all, you can identify all of us. We're the ones who wear the clothing that can become soiled without concern. I've experienced a dog park over in Morro Bay when they were first working to develop that. I was involved in it over there. It was arduous. It took forever. But we had no support. In this particular case, it seems that we have a good foundation of support, which is essential. The other support that I found just recently, because we've just actually sat and formed a committee, is that this is going to grow exponentially, which means that we'll be able to collaborate, we'll be able to help this whole development. And certainly, even with the church, we can understand that there's concerns there. My experience has been that with a dog that has been properly exercised, they're not likely to be barking. They're not likely to be aggressive in any manner. In fact, all they want to do is go home and lay down on a cool floor. It's a wonderful thing for the dogs. It's a wonderful thing for the community. The community all over will be benefited by a dog park. And I know that we will do our best to assist and come up with the organization that can work well with the CSD and everyone involved. Thank you. Hope this goes through.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it.
Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Cindy Tully. New to Los Osos. I've only been here for a few months.
Welcome.
And I volunteered to work with the team of community people here on developing the foundation for the dog park. I find that Los Osos is a really special place. Coming from the San Francisco Bay Area, I just love it here, and I think that the community will benefit greatly by the incorporation of a dog park. Everybody seems to walk the streets, and there's a lot of little pathways and everything. I'm just learning all of this, and I find that having a central area for the people that have dogs to go would be a great benefit for private property as well as just getting to know your neighbors. I think that in the short time that I've been involved with the organization or the development of the organization, I believe that the collaboration with the CSD and the different parks groups here in the city or the town of Los Osos, I think a benefit would be to have our organization partnership with everyone here in Los Osos, because we would be able to fundraise and maintain the the dog park, and actually act as representatives to the neighbors and the rest of the community. I'm sure that there will be issues forever on dog parks because it's different and new, and I think having a group of people in the community that are working together to support that and take care of it would be beneficial. But thank you, and I hope you vote for it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Leslie McCants. I live here in Los Osos, and I want to invite any board member to come next Wednesday to the Red Barn at 6:30, because that's when this wonderful group is getting together again. Okay? And I did pass along that information to the church. But do come and dress warmly.
Thank
it's
you.
It's cold.
Indeed. Thank you. Welcome.
Yes, good evening. Larry Bender, I resident here, dog owner, and just letting you know my support for the dog park and anything I can do to help establish that. That's what I'm here for. Yeah.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson. Red Barn, cold. I'm looking right at Chuck. I support this. I agree. This is an arduous task. I know from being in lead position on doing the addition to the community center and dealing with the county and rewriting the lease agreement and back and forth, that alone took 6 months between me and county council and stuff, and change a word here and make sure that the new insurance limits were covered. I mean, it takes time. This isn't going to be the top thing on their list, so plan on that. But I'm looking at Chuck, because maybe we can put this on our next board meeting to see if there's time that the community center would be available for them to hold their meetings. One of the nights that it's not used on a regular basis. I'm just throwing that out there. It's a warmer spot. It's a bigger hall. It's got chairs. So anyway, Chuck can respond or whatever, but I'm willing to put it on the agenda if he is. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Terry Trevis, a resident of 20 years of Los Osos. I'm really a proponent of this dog park. I think it'd be great that we actually had a place that was legal to take our dogs. We all kind of that have our dogs want them to be off leash, and there's many places that we take them that you don't want us to take them. So this would be a great opportunity for us to go to a place where they are under control, and people that don't want to be around dogs don't have to be around dogs. Thank you. And I'm glad the CSD is entertaining this.
Thank you.
Lori McCombs, a resident of Los Osos for 30 years. And I didn't really plan on speaking, but I just want to mention that so many other communities have got their dog parks going, and they've made a success of it. And I just walk my dog every day, and it's unusual to see a person walking without a dog in this town. So we really need one. We're getting, our population is getting older, which means that it would be nice for them to have a place where they could take their dog, sit and rest, and their dog get some exercise so they will not be barking. Dogs don't bark when they're tired. And most complaints are about barking dogs. And so please help us get this dog park going. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Okay, Lynette Tornotsky. I don't have a dog, but I think a dog park is a great idea, so I hope you go ahead with this. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm thank you for all your patience seeing through the process in this meeting. It's just a small preview of what it's going to take to get this done, but I'm very heartened by your enthusiasm, so thank you very much. So at this time, I can entertain a motion. Director Ohilski.
Yes, I'll make a motion that we receive and file the administrative and committee reports, and we approve the items on the consent agenda.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a roll call.
Director Chernotsky.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. Director
Ohilski. Thank you. Yes.
Sorry. Eastern Europe. It's okay.
Yes.
Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Vice President Miller?
Yes.
And President Storm?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So, step one. Okay, so moving on to general action items. I want to clarify on this process. So at the last meeting, when Marshall was still president, he appointed a bylaws committee, and we went and made some changes, and we voted at the last meeting to bring it back this time. One of the things we did was have each director appoint someone. So in order for that to work, everybody's got to have a pick, and if you want to use that pick or leave someone there, that's fine, but the only way to make it, you know, we're all among equals here, is to give everybody their pick. So that's what we're going to. That's what we're going to do.
Can I piggyback on that too? Just, yeah. I think is Richard still here to address his specific question? Whether or not somebody's actually submitted an application, they're eligible for appointment. Okay. So the applications are just for people who want to let us know that they're interested. So if they're already on a committee, or they didn't submit an application, they're still eligible for appointment. Just want to clarify that.
There's no.
So we're not even bound by the 2017 local appointment list here, really. This is just kind of a status of who's expressed interest so far, who has been serving.
Yep. Okay. It's up to you. And
wide open.
That's because the way we looked at it was, you know, we're elected. We want to have our people on there, and so that's how it is. So unless there's any other questions.
Well, Chuck wasn't here last time, so maybe if I could just piggyback on that for just a quick second.
Good, nice.
I did form the ad hoc committee when I was president. But the idea was to make the directors responsible for their appointments. So in other words, like if you're in
the county of San Luis Obispo or the city of San Luis Obispo, you in the county, Bruce Gibson, would appoint a planning commissioner. So you're responsible for that individual's actions. So it was the same idea that we were adopting here. So we changed the basic concept. And I forgot he wasn't here, so I just wanted to piggyback on that.
Well, we've done something similar in the past. I mean, in years past, it used to be that we would rotate and each board member would pick somebody off the list of applicants. And that's the change, is that you had to be on the list of applicants. So that's not new, and the fact that, and I guess a committee member and an alternate, that's kind of a minor change, because now if that second committee member, board member, committee member isn't there, if somebody else does show up who isn't on the committee, they're allowed to speak. We're not violating the Brown Act that way. So I don't see a big change in any of that.
Yeah, and we did, if you notice in the bylaws, I apologize, but we did talk about there's going to be a minority and a majority report to the board.
Yes.
So we're going to make sure that That's everybody good. Gets the opportunity. So even though you don't prevail at the committee, your minority report will be brought forward to the board.
Then maybe that could be reflected also in little things like the minutes, because, again, I'm reading through minutes of some of these meetings, and so-and-so spoke, so-and-so spoke. I don't know what they said.
That's
were they for? Were they against?
Right.
It really
so that's
helps.
Why we said that's why we said a majority and a minority report. So anyway, I apologize.
Good.
I just wanted to.
No, I like.
Chuck
I think those
wasn't
are good.
Here, so I wanted to.
Yeah, good. So that's the theory behind that, and we do want to make sure we get all the feedback. It is the advisory committees, after all, right? Okay. So I'll open up for public comment on our before we each make our appointments.
Good evening, Julie Tackert, and I have been serving at the pleasure of the board on the Emergency Services Committee since 2004, and it's been indeed a great pleasure. We've done a lot of work at that committee, and I've really appreciated being there. I did submit an application for Parks and Rec because my 2017 term expired. The notice that was sent to the committee members was had that list that you have of both years, the 17 and 18, but they were highlighted that the 17s were the only ones expiring. So I failed to submit another application for emergency services because my term ends in 2018. I did submit one for the Parks and Rec because it expires in 17. Similarly, my partner, Jeff Edwards, serves on the Finance Committee and would through 2018, and I'm sure, I know, he'd be happy to serve again. The confusion, there's some confusion with how that went out, but what's not available are applications from the 2018 expirees, and that while you only have one new board member, she could look at all of our goals, qualifications, the things that we offer as committee members, and she's not getting the benefit of that in this board packet. So with all of that said, myself, I would be honored to serve again on the Emergency Services Committee, Parks and Rec Committee. I know Jeff would like to serve again on the Finance Committee. So however this shakes out, I hope you all take our interest into consideration.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. So I'm going to go and I'm going to appoint Mike Wright to ESAC, Sherry Grimm to Finance.
Can we just do one committee at a time?
I'm just going to do one person at a time. Gene Heyer to Utilities. Andrea Luker to Parks and Rec. Vice President Millage.
Sure.
ESAC, Mike Wright, former director.
He didn't apply for
ESAC. We said before we don't need to have the application. So this about who applied, we don't need it. They need to qualify.
Nothing in the bylaws required an application.
No, but your staff report said you would reconstitute the members.
Okay, Mike Wright for ESAC, Sherry Grimm for FAC, Gene Heyer for Utilities, Andrea Luker for Parks and Rec. Vice President Millage.
I'm appointing...
Microphone on.
Thank you. For emergency services, I'm appointing Paul Hirschfeld. For the Finance Advisory Committee, I'm appointing Christine Womack. For Parks and Recreation, I'm appointing Alyssa Feldman. And for the Utilities Advisory Committee, I'm appointing Jan Harper.
Thank you. Do you need those repeated? Okay. Director Ohilski.
Yeah, for emergency services, I'm going to appoint Thomas Wright.
Ooh.
I'm sorry if he was on your list.
Tricky.
And then for financial advisory, Lisa Gonzalez. For Parks and Rec, Shauna Sullivan. And for utility advisory, I'd like to appoint both Leonard and Ron. So
I think...
I'll go ahead and appoint Leonard. I hope to goodness somebody appoints Ron, though.
I think that, yeah. Okay. Chuck, Director Cicena.
For emergency services,
I would like to nominate Julie Tacker or appoint Julie Tacker to the committee. For financial advisory committee, I would like to appoint Jeff Edwards. For Parks and Recreation, Sean is already gone. William Fitzgerald, let's get some new blood. And Utility Advisory Committee, Lee Harry.
Director Tornatsky.
Okay,
wait a minute. Pardon. Mr. Munns, I forgot. He hasn't been picked yet for a Utility Advisory Committee. I mean, that's...
Okay, so would you like to... Well, you do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, Munns was my guy for UAC, but...
Okay.
You guys can flip-flop as long as you get them both at this.
Well, I didn't want... I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay, you done?
Mm-hmm.
For UAC is Gene Heyer.
I already appointed him.
And Ron Munns has already been picked.
No, he hasn't.
No, he hasn't.
For UAC?
Well, that's what I meant to do. If you're going to pick Ron, I'm fine. I'll take Lee. That's fine.
Okay, good.
Okay. Parks and Rec. somebody took Bill Fitzgerald. was Shauna picked yet?
Yes.
How about Andrea?
Yeah.
Jennifer. She's been picked as well?
No.
Yeah.
Good. Jennifer Forenge. And somebody already... Okay, Finance Advisory. Has Lisa Gonzalez been picked? See, I have these great picks. Christine Womack.
I already picked her.
Gene is you can only be on one at a time.
Okay, how about Michael Burns? Has he been picked?
No.
Okay. For ESAC, Gene Heyer's been picked.
Yes.
You got two incumbents that haven't been picked, Jerry and Vita and Stephen Best, who's not an incumbent. Those are your three.
Jerry.
Okay. Very good. Moving along to appointment of district representatives to outside agencies. This is pretty self-explanatory, so I'll just go to public comment. Any public comment on appointments to outside agencies?
Can I ask a question before
yep.
we go to that? You need to appoint the committee chairs here.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
As part of this?
As part of this.
Okay, well, then public needs to know that, I guess.
Okay, my bad. I was going to do all of the presidential stuff now. Any public comment? No? Okay. So under the new bylaws, we have a chair and an alternate. I'm sorry. District representatives to outside agencies and chairman of the advisory committees.
Okay. I still am trying to understand how somebody who didn't even apply for a committee can get picked for a committee. So basically, the pool of applicants for these committees is the entire town?
Yes.
Wow. That the bylaws committee should be reconstituted for, just for that. People have to, wow, that, anyway. That's crossing over into Board of Supervisors appointments. But the committee assignments, I hope you're picking somebody for utilities that has experience of sitting on this board for a period of time and understands the issues. I think it's very important. I don't think you can pick. I have a real problem that Chuck, as the, well, now that Marshall got reelected, those are the only two three-time elected officials in this community. And Chuck sits on no major positions in this district. He, as far as vice president or president, and wasn't even nominated last time. So I think he at least deserves the opportunity to chair water. He's been, utilities, I'll put it all together. He's been involved for a decade in these issues, all the way back to meetings at the water board when the water board turned microphones off on the public in Los Osos. Chuck was involved. He's been involved through the whole process. You might not have liked his stance on where the sewer project was located, but he knows what he's talking about, and he's been involved, and he's had the contacts, and he's had the meetings, and I think he deserves that opportunity. Don't just shuffle him off to emergency services, you know, the easy committees. This is the opportunity to make up for what happened last month.
Thank you. Okay, any other public comment? Okay, so the way I did this was with a mind to the same considerations that we put into constituting the committees, which is this idea of accountability on what we got elected on. So I'm not doing this to make up for anything, but I'm keeping in mind the issues people have experience in and what they ran on and a bunch of other factors. So, and also in the new bylaws, we have a chair and an alternate instead of a chair and a vice chair. So the idea is the chair goes, and then if any other member of the board wants to go, they can attend that meeting and they don't have to wear a paper bag over their head. And then if they can't, they can try to get their alternate to come, or we can work that out. So with that, here are my appointments. ESAC, the chair is Vicky, alternate is Lou. FAC, chair is Marshall, alternate is John Eric. Utilities Advisory Committee, chair is Chuck, alternate is Vicky. Parks and Rec, chair is Lou, alternate John Eric. Morro Bay National Estuary Program, Marshall, alternate Storm. Water Resources RAC, that's Chuck, keeping in mind again that his signs during the election said it's about our water. I respect that. And the alternate is General Manager Osborne. Capslo, again, Chuck. Alternate Lou.
What was that?
Capslo, alternate. On FireSafe, did we ever does that have to be a director? No. We had one last year, so I'm just going off what we did last year. If there's no alternate for Capsula, then there's no alternate.
Well, that's just if Chuck can't make it, that person has to.
Yeah, I'm not sure that their bylaws allow.
Okay, well, then there is that one.
I've never seen an alternate step in there.
Fire Protection, was it Bright was a member of that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Director Wright, many years.
Okay. I'll be the representative to that, and alternate will be Millage. Going to leave the Basin Management Committee the way it is, and I'm going to change one thing. Since Lynette is on LOCAC, I'd like you to be our kind of standing envoy to LOCAC, and if you can't make it or whatever, just let me know, and I'll.
So we can go drink afterwards.
I'll follow up with you. Yeah. So you can't make everybody happy all the time, but I think that the changes make people. You know, there's a direct line of accountability. We get the person who's elected and has their legitimacy that way is the one putting people on the committees. And I like that, and I like implementing that change. So with that, we're done with general action items. Yep.
So in the consent agenda, so we adopted the work program for each one of the committees, and now you've appointed the committee chair. So it's at our discretion to have a monthly meeting or a bi-monthly or whatever we think is appropriate. Is that correct?
Yeah, it should, you know, it's monthly.
So we need to coordinate that with Renee and Ann as far as when those meetings will be held. And with our new members or different members, we may have different meeting dates so those people are available. I just want to make sure I was on the right page here.
I think that's right, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I already see one change I'd like to make with the utility schedule, and that is that I think we should meet as soon as possible after the Basin Management Committee meetings. That way we've got fresh things to be working with. It's to try and make those coincide.
Brilliant. So, yeah, you know, get with the people and the staff and, you know, pick a time that makes sense.
One thing I would like to bring back to this board, we heard it tonight from a member of the rate structure committee. We need to make some decisions about the admin allocation, how we're going to distribute that, and then the property taxes. We talked about maybe a 25% reduction going to water each year, and we need to make those finalized somehow.
The chairman of the FAC, I think I can coordinate with you, and we can try to come up with a priority list of items that need to be dealt with in the short term here, because I know the utility advisor, the rate committee is going to have to be, I don't want to say reporting, but or responsible, but they're going to have to deal with both of our committees. So I think we can coordinate between the two of us to make sure that they have the information that they need. So.
Yeah, I agree. We need to move the ball on that. Does anybody else have any future agenda items they'd like to place. Okay. Closing board comments.
Welcome to 2017. I think we're ready for a good, productive year. It's going to be tricky. Water issues are way more complex, I think, than anything that we've had before us before. So let's just keep the dialogue going. I'm glad we've got something positive for the community to focus on, not being a dog owner. You know, I truly don't have a dog in that fight, but it's good to see some enthusiasm.
I'm stealing that. I'm stealing that. Problem is I have two dogs. Anybody else?
I think this is so far, and I think it's going to continue and grow, a positive year. We've got some new faces, new perspectives, and looks good. Like it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I appreciated the public participation as far as the dog park. You know, and I think that as Chuck and Lubo said, I think that, you know, hopefully we can keep moving forward and get rid of, make this a cooperative, productive year. So,
I just, those of you who are left in the room from the dog park contingent, it, for a while it sounded like you thought you needed to convince us, and I want to let you know that some of us have been working towards that dog park for a really long time, and I have two.
Thanks, everyone. This year, as Chuck says, welcome to 2017. It may seem like events in the world are spinning out of our control, but here in Los Osos, I was so inspired by at the awards dinner by the Citizen of the Year and the speech Christina Grimm gave, and I just realized we live in such a wonderful place. We can harness the positive energy here at home. We can do good things. And so I really look forward to that, and thank you for everybody. And with that, meeting adjourned. I don't even know what it is.